Insights to Live By, the podcast, discovering new pearls of wisdom to enrich our lives. When everything feels urgent and overwhelming, how does one get out of survival mode and into greatness? Put another way, how can you command the chaos to feel accomplished, fulfilled, and joyful every day? Hello and welcome to Insights to Live By. I am your host, Matt Zimmons. So thankful to be with you here today as we continue our trek through 2024. We have the right person to answer those questions. She is a powerhouse keynote speaker, productivity consultant, and corporate trainer, as well as the founder of SO Productive, a productivity company that works with busy professionals who are career-driven but face work-life imbalance, stress, and overwhelm. So we're right on our theme here. Welcome to the show, Sarah Ohanesson. Pleasure.
Thank you so much, Matt. Happy to be here.
Excellent. I had to practice your last name a couple of times, I'm sure. You said you answered it to O. That just kind of...
Well, you know what? Coming on a stage, right? You give somebody your intro to introduce you as you're about to go on the stage, and they literally look at it and say, oh, no, I don't know how to say this last name.
Yes.
So it is Ohanesson. You said it correctly.
Thank
but
you.
I just go by Sarah O. It's easier to remember. And,
Sarah
you know,
O.
I don't want my last name to be the thing that causes you stress.
No, I'm not stressed at all. Sarah O's in the house, everybody. So, Sarah, we know each other through our speaking endeavors. You are the president of the National Speaker Association here in Philadelphia, kind of a mentor to me here as you're moving along in your speaking career. How's that going? How's this the speaking going for you?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I think one of the blessings that we get to have and the privileges that we get to have as speakers is that we get to share these messages that hopefully transform people's lives. So it is, I really treat that as a blessing and a privilege at the same time. And I appreciate you saying as a mentor to you, because that's why I'm serving our local Philadelphia chapter of National Speakers Association, because I really believe in helping each other succeed. So I'm all about that mission of what I know. I'm an open book. I'm happy to share, because when one of us succeeds, we all succeed.
I love it. Yeah. And look, anytime you do those kinds of volunteer jobs, they're more often than not, unfortunately, somewhat thankless. And, you know, all the work that goes on behind the scenes, people don't realize I do. And I'm very thankful for you. So I look forward to all of our collaboration moving forward. And Sarah, I discovered something else about you that we have in common. You know, LinkedIn's a great thing for this. Our career trajectory is very similar. Did you notice that I started in public relations just like you? I'm like, oh, she was at Divine and Gregory FCA. I know those guys. So that's they've been around forever. Then you went into the marketing role with a transition type program for young adults, right? Flowing into their careers. Well, I ran the Internship Institute for 15 years trying to do just the same thing. Here we are doing speaking and productivity. So I don't know. I'm going to school. One of us is going to school on the other. Yeah. I know. It's just meant to be. So now our topic that is so essential to everyone. Everyone feels like they just don't have enough hours in the day. The companies are dealing with the stress and overwhelm that affect well-being. You and I are co-advocates in and around the burnout epidemic that happens as a result of that. So tell us about a typical engagement, individuals, companies coming to you. How do you work with them to address these challenges?
Big question. Big question.
It's very open-ended, Sarah.
How do we address this? Well, and I often say, you know, I think we underestimate. We talk about burnout as if it's this thing that, you know, well, Matt's dealing with a little bit of burnout. Oh, Sarah's feeling burned out. Well, like, get over it and, you know, keep calm and carry on. I think it's important to recognize that burnout is now officially recognized as a condition by the World Health Organization. Hmm. So what is maybe what was perceived as a small problem that we could kind of sweep under the rug is huge.
Yeah, it's epidemic.
And I've often referenced this as the pandemic we had before COVID. And you just said it, this pandemic, this epidemic of burnout, it is so insanely prevalent that I know we have so much work to do in this space. So how do I tackle this? One of the things I feel grateful to get to do is ideally when I can work with a company at a high level in terms of I can meet with the team, I can meet with leadership, find out what's really going on here. What are the real, you know, pain points of the organization? But then also drill down and get into some coaching with individuals on that team. That is where I find we can make the most impact, because so often there often is a disconnect. And especially when some employees at an individual level are feeling that burnout, and I'm sure you've encountered this in your work with clients, sometimes there's an underlying issue there. Sometimes it's a culture issue. Sometimes it's a process and a systems procedure issue.
Right.
So I love when I can meet with everyone as a team, but then also really kind of get in there with individual employees and find out what's actually going on here, because then I can help with really come up with some real concrete solutions. So that's my ideal way that I get to work with clients.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, we're really in sync here. I was thinking the same thing in my head as you're actually verbalizing it and coming at this in different ways, in the sense that, look, you know, there's the well-being aspect of just getting well and staying well. And what are those healthy habits and things that people need to do in order to insulate themselves from the likes of burnout? But like you said, organizationally, there are whole other factors that people may not have control of their days. I always talk about the tail wagging the dog and, you know, what's involved with that organizationally. And then there's the individual and organizational productivity aspects that are major contributing factors. So that's really where you come at addressing this. We do want to cover it from all angles. So I'm so happy to be talking with you today, because I've never really tackled this. So what are the typical problems that you're finding that people are experiencing? Is it just their own habits or the organizations? I'm sure it's all over the place, but what are your experiences?
It's all over the place. And I think one thing that's really important to recognize is sometimes we don't want to talk about burnout. We don't want to talk about to our managers, especially, that I'm feeling overwhelmed and I'm feeling stressed. Like, when and how do you bring that up to your manager? Right. So I think one of the things that's really important to recognize is that you're probably not alone in this feeling. There are more people dealing with burnout than care to admit it. There are more people stressed and overwhelmed probably in your own workplace. And so I think that's just important. It's like, if you're feeling this, someone else might be too. So being able to open up a conversation around that, I think, is actually really important, and realizing I'm not alone. These are normal feelings. So what are some of the things that I typically say? This is your question.
Yeah.
It depends. And I run the gamut of this, because sometimes it is a mindset thing. Sometimes I'm seeing clients dealing with perfectionism. Are they dealing with analysis paralysis? Are they overthinking? Are they spending too much time on things that might not move the needle in the business? So I'll give you an example.
Sure.
I had a client who was just kind of overworking until all hours of the night. And at some point it was like the report didn't get any better, right? The report was done at 6 p.m., but you continue to work on it until 2 p.m. So recognizing what's good enough, that's another thing. I do a lot of work in that space. So that's kind of at the individual level. On the team side of it, the more corporate side of it, what I'm finding is a lot of times process, systems, tools. Sometimes we have people in the wrong seats on the bus. You've probably heard that term quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it's this balance of recognizing what's happening with the individuals and what's true. What demands are the managers truly putting on those professionals? And then what can the company actually do about it? So like I said, I see all kinds of different things, but to me, it's a very holistic, when I can put the pieces of this puzzle together,
sure,
that's where I can start to see, okay, we've got a couple things going on here. Now, what are we going to do about it? And a lot of that at a company level comes back to systems, processes, and do we have the right people in the right roles?
Right. So you're going in with a diagnostic across all of these different modalities in terms of what's affecting people's lives. And, you know, the good news, bad news really is that the executives, the major decision makers, are experiencing burnout just the same as everyone. So, right. So they're recognizing you don't have to, you know, it's not a hard sell for people to, you know, those decision makers to get that this is an issue if as for them than for others. But when you get into action in these different ways, as the issues that you're describing present themselves, let's get practical. What are some of the things that you're doing to help make the adjustments, whether that's individually, organizationally, or any other way?
Well, one of the first things off the bat that, again, I think is important to just recognize, like, what's really going on here is I always think about productivity and productivity systems in terms of neurodiversity. So what I mean by that is, because I know I realize that's a newer term that maybe not everyone is as familiar with, but
right.
Most teams have different brains. So if to have a neurodiverse team means we've got different brain types on our team. So we might have someone who's neurotypical, who's got ADHD, who's got autism, who has OCD, these different spectrums of brain type.
Hmm.
I think that is something that organizations are often missing. So back to the systems, we're saying, Matt, this is the way that we're going to work. Right. Have a great day.
Right.
It could be that someone on your team is going, that really is a struggle for the way that my brain works. So one of the things that I think is really, you know, one of the things I'm really trying to do right now is raise awareness on what is neurodiversity in the first place. And then how can we start to accommodate and really talk about what are the different brain types that we have on our team and what do those people need to best succeed? And that's, I think, a missing piece for a lot of organizations is how do people actually process the information that right. we're giving them? And different brains truly process the same information in different ways. And I think that's a critical piece a lot of companies are missing.
It's interesting. You know, it's always been there. It's underlying, it's subtle in that way. You're answering that question in doing my homework. I'm like, do I really know the difference between neurotypical and neurodivergent and why it matters? I think Gen Z is actually having a positive effect on this in terms of having to get into the weeds and really address what formerly wasn't recognized as so essential in what you're describing. But what do you do about it? Because you have these dominant yeah. personalities that may be one way, and they're, you know, if I'm a leader and I'm maybe a type A, more dominant type, and I want things done a certain way, and I'm a little bit rigid because of my own personality. But let's say I try. Let's say I recognize that there are members on my team who don't do things the same way. Let's get in the weeds here. What do you do? How do you adapt to that?
Absolutely. And I think it's also important to say that not everyone can be accommodated all day, every day.
Right.
Like there, we
That's
all
fair.
Have to make concessions and work together.
Sure.
So blanket statement there. But one of the things that I love to encourage companies do and help clients do is have this concept kind of always in the back of your mind is help me understand.
Ah, one of my favorites.
I love that phrase. Because what I'm noticing is when we put these walls up, when we say, if I'm your manager, Matt, here it is, here's the thing I need you to do. And then you don't do it, or you miss the deadline, or you're procrastinating on it, or you didn't do it the way that I wanted you to do it, or that I expected you to do it.
Sure.
One of the things that I always like to encourage managers to do, instead of, you know, putting the hammer down, Matt, that was shame on you. You didn't do it that way.
Yeah.
Is instead say, this didn't meet my expectations. Help me understand. Hmm. That phrase opens up this conversation and hopefully it allows your environment to be safe to say, hey, I'm coming from a caring place. I want this to work. Can you help me understand what's going on here? When we position it in that way, I have just seen the tremendous impact of that phrase because it allows people to open up and say, actually, you sent me a color-coded spreadsheet and I'm colorblind. Like I actually didn't see the colors.
Hmm.
Okay, now we have something that we can actually work with. So that shift from blaming someone for the work they didn't do
right.
to help me understand
it's neutral.
Why
it's
that
neutral.
Happened,
yeah.
that shift is huge. And it should allow us then to better accommodate each other in the future. In the future, I'm not going to send you color-coded spreadsheets. Okay, makes sense. And so sometimes it's something small, sometimes it's something big, but it opens up that conversation to say, here's what I need to do my best work in the environment that we're in currently.
Right. So managers are always looking to help their people be more efficient to get to the end result. People want to feel productive. The company has to function in that way for the salaries that they're paying people. But there are these individual diagnostics that can come up, like here's a sign that somebody's, you know, there's a mismatch and that communication is going to need to be that much more proactive, including in the hybrid and virtual space, which, you know, adds another dimension to that challenge. Any more thoughts on that?
Well, I think now more than ever. So one of the things that the consulting arm of my company does is we implement task management, project management software at companies. So we're certified in Asana and Monday.com, Notion. What's beautiful about this is we had an opportunity, especially during the pandemic, to help these teams, because what the remote work, the hybrid work has done is it's actually shown, the light has been shown. I don't think I'm saying that right. The light has shined upon,
I get it,
some bad management, some bad practices, some bad processes going on. Huh. So I think that the pandemic really allowed us to see this. And now we gotta do something about it. We gotta fix it. So huge opportunity for companies to really think about, how do we manage? How do we have processes? How are our systems operating? Because in hybrid, in remote work, it is more necessary than ever.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Again, I was looking at the Asana and the things that you're mentioning in terms of these productivity systems. And look, it's me, myself, and I as an entrepreneur. I've never really seen anything quite like that implemented. And then, you know, my response to that, just from a conceptual standpoint, is, you know, where's the line between productivity for the sake of productivity and almost it being counterintuitive, where you're putting potentially certain systems or ways of doing things in place that are counterproductive. So, help me understand, Sarah, if you don't mind, a little bit more about these systems and why it is that and how it is that they help. What makes sense in terms of implementing them, and where's that line of productivity?
Oh, absolutely. This is a topic I absolutely love. I think even as a solopreneur, having processes, which I mean templates, ways of working, all of that is helpful, whether you are a solopreneur all the way up to a large enterprise organization. And we have clients that run the gamut of that. Because if you have to do something more than three times, my recommendation is to have a template. So that could be having a template for emails you write frequently, having a template for certain processes that you're going to do over and over again. So these tools just help to support that. And also, as you grow and as you scale, it's easy to keep track of the things you have to do on a post-it note for a little while. But as companies grow, the systems get bigger and we have more tasks and we have more projects and more people and more things we have to manage. Now we need a really good tool that can become our central source of truth, our place where we know all the information's in that place and we have a process for how we're going to manage that work. Because otherwise, it really is hard to scale. So a lot of companies will come to us when they're at that, you know, we're coming from small to medium. We're going from medium to large. We have an influx of new hires coming on board. That's a really good time to analyze your process and your systems and to say, you know, do we need to scale up? Can our software, can our systems actually support that?
Is there a sweet spot that you find in the companies that you work with that, you know, certain, whether it's industries or size, I'm just spitballing here for the moment, but size companies where, you know, there's a real lack where they really, you know, can be stepping up in the ways you're describing.
Well, I mentioned earlier that many people, I shouldn't speak in absolutes, not everyone, but many people are feeling stressed, burned out, overwhelmed.
Right.
It's the same answer here. This, having a system, having a process, having a good tool, it benefits companies of every single size. So I think a common misconception at small businesses is, well, we're not big enough for that. We don't need that. There's only three of us. that's the perfect time to get this stuff in place, because then as you scale, you're essentially prototyping it out so that now we can hire someone new. We can get to 4, 5, 6 people quite quickly because we've got this really strong process and a foundation in place. So I would say if you're small, this is the great time to do it.
So these templates and systems you're describing are certainly ways to gain the productivity to kind of get your arms around the things that are getting away from you. I want to stay in the practical arena here. What other kinds of types of things are you implementing and working with companies and individuals to do in order to gain their time back? I was looking at some of your content. It's like, well, here's how you gain 2 hours before lunch. Or, you know, the way you just say things, like, I'd like to know how do you do that. What are your thoughts on this?
So I created a productivity system that I call COAT, which is COAT.
Okay.
So I say it's a coat that fits everyone. And this, the C in COAT is clarify. Because what I was noticing, so if you want to gain time back in your week,
right,
get clarity on what is actually on your plate. And I think this is a little bit, oh, whoa, that's so simple. That's so straightforward. How right. did I never thought of that before. It is a huge piece that I see people missing. And when I say clarity, I mean really getting clear on what is the task and why does it matter?
Being intentional.
Really intentional,
yeah.
Because this step is missed so often. How oftentimes do you get, you know, a message on Teams or Slack, or you're getting an email from someone, you're like, oh yeah, okay, I'll take care of that. Let me go do that for them, without pausing to say, you know, do I have the clarity? Do I know exactly what the expectations are for me on this task, on this project? Am I crystal clear on what I need to do? What's going to be a good outcome of this project? And then that why piece is so critical.
Right.
There was a study done. Asana actually did a study, and they found that 46% of employees don't know how their work adds value to the company.
Wow.
So that's about half of us walking around going, I don't know why it matters. Well, what do you do
when
you
don't know why your work matters? I get
a paycheck and
I don't, well, I'm just a number.
You're going to procrastinate. You're going to put it off. You're not going to do it. And so I really have found that when people know what it is they have to do with extreme clarity,
right,
and they know why it matters, now we've got that motivation. We can see how my small piece of the work impacts a larger company. So that C, what and why, getting that clarity around that is, if you want 2 hours back in your week, get it there.
Sure.
Because I promise you're wasting time during the week working on things that are slightly off course, or that's not exactly what your manager meant. You misunderstood that a little bit. So it's a moment to pause, which in the moment takes a little bit more time. It saves you hours in the long run, because when you start something, you know you're working on the right thing.
Yeah, and things are constantly coming up, and having that clarity and being intentional about those priorities, keeping an eye on the ball. You know, it's easy to go, you know, squirrel, you know, or somebody asks you to do something and then suddenly your day just goes, you know, poof. And all those priorities you still have in deadlines, you know, that are piling up on you, creating the pressures, are compounding. So does that bring us to the O in COAT?
Yeah, we're happy to go through it.
Let's go through the COAT. You can't just start. You can't just stop at C.
Perfect. So the O is to organize. And obviously one of the ways I love to teach clients to do this is to use a system to do that, is to use a tool. If you don't have a tool, you can use a pen and paper. But the key here is figuring out, okay, when am I going to do this thing?
Right.
Who else needs to be involved in this thing? And when, like, in what point of my calendar can I actually fit this thing into the calendar? The other kind of key here is that priority piece. So what is the most important priority?
Sure.
So organizing the work is really, really critical. And again, if you've got a fancy digital tool, you're going to have all kinds of bells and whistles in there that are going to help you do this.
Right.
If you've got a pen and paper, which I'm assuming everyone listening does, just write it out. What are all the things that you have to do? And then really, really think about, when can I get this thing done? The other piece here that I see often, a lot of us end up with this huge task list, right? Like hundreds of things we feel like we have to do.
Yeah.
One of the easiest ways to reduce your to-do list is to separate the ideas from the action list.
Hmm.
Because ideas are things that we don't actually have to do right now. So they're in our head, we're thinking about them, we feel like maybe we have to, but we actually do not when we sit down to think about it. So it could be that actually someone else on the team has to do that. Or that's not due right now, I can do that later. Or that's not a top priority right now, I can do that later. So the action list becomes this much smaller list of things that you can actually do and that are really important to do right now. So big difference there between action and ideas. And I've seen that be a real, you know, a real help for clients.
Yeah, so you need that sorting system, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just organizing the tasks.
I like it. Does that bring us to A?
It does. Okay. So the A is the fun one. Act. We have to act. We have to take action. How many times do people say, oh my gosh, I hardly got anything done today. I was interrupted all day.
Most days. You know? Yeah, right.
The reason you're not getting the things done, the reason that you might not be reaching your goals is because you're not spending time working on those things. Like, hard truth time.
Right.
So this is about physically having that time on your calendar to physically sit down and take action. And my encouragement here is to act on impact. Act on the things that matter most. So again, you've got your list organized. Pick out the next most important thing. That's what you should be working on.
Right.
Because I often see people pick email. They pick the easy thing.
Right.
Pick that thing that's really going to move the needle to act on. And then the T is the fun one. You might think this is
sure.
This is optional or nice to have.
Okay.
But the T is for take time. Mm. Because when we take time to relax, to recharge, to unwind, I think this is when we're getting to your territory a little bit more, Matt.
Yeah.
We actually are more productive the next day. Because we can't just work and work and work and work and work. It's not sustainable.
Your energy so management, people, your capacity. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. So giving people permission to first take time, like physically check that thing off your list, celebrate what you did, honor your accomplishments, the accomplishments of the people on your team, and then also chill out.
Gotta chill.
Like permission to get away from the computer,
right?
To go watch a show, to go play golf, to go, you know, go on TikTok for a few minutes. Like, I think overachievers, high achievers, often need that permission, that taking time, they're allowed to actually do it.
Right.
So that's coat, COAT.
Yeah, you can't, you got to have the T to have coat. I'm just going to put it there. Yeah. I'm glad we went through that. Those are the kinds of things that, you know, in how my mind works, you know, as well, you know, organizes for me. And certainly if there's any more practical tips you have, you know, at that nitty gritty level, I'd love to hear anything that you'd like to share. But I also, as we wrap up the topic, want to come back to the bigger picture of that nearly half of the people don't really know, you know, what purpose their work is for in the entree to the show about, you know, getting into the mode of feeling purposeful and fulfilled. So I want to come back to that as well. More thoughts on the nitty gritty, or you want to head to there now?
I think the other a big piece, again, back to calendar management,
sure,
that I think this kind of leads us into the bigger piece. So I'll transition us there, Matt.
Okay, thanks.
But the piece of putting time on your calendar to work on the things that matter and honoring that time, it is so easy to have everybody else interrupt you. And again, you get through the day and you go, oh my gosh, what happened today? I didn't get anything done. Having a meeting, like physically putting a meeting on the calendar. I have on my calendar time to work. It's blocked. I have to get the work done, right? Time on your calendar to make sure that you can fulfill what you've promised to clients, to your boss, to your team. You got to have time to get the work done and being intentional with that space. So my practical tip is getting that time on your calendar and then physically writing in, this is what I'm going to work on during that time. And maybe you can plan that out a day or two ahead of time, which is fantastic.
Right.
But then when you sit down, that hour approaches, you're like, oh, I do. I know exactly what I'm working on at 3 o'clock.
During your C phase. When you're setting your intention.
Yeah.
I love that. Look, it's simple and it's essential, but all too easy not to do. So
it's so easy not to do.
Right.
Because
it's
so easy to say, oh, I can cancel that meeting.
I got that. Or I know my priorities, but just a little added discipline to create that space is certainly going to, you know, it's so impactful. It's going to take a lot of pressure off of you, especially if you do it earlier in the week or you're not getting yourself pushed through a deadline where, you know, the pressure cooker starts building. Wonderful. Yeah. Please keep going.
When I see a lot of people who there is important work, there is a deadline looming. So they're in meetings all day, and then their most important work that they have to do is happening at night. It's happening on the weekend when our brains are not at our best.
Right.
But that's the most important work you had to do that week. So instead, my encouragement is like, we talked about you command the chaos, get in control. How you do that is you say, I'm protecting this time from 9 to 10 this morning just to get this one thing done across my plate. That makes people feel just so good about the space that they're in and accomplished. I don't have to work on it tonight. I did it this morning. And my other just real tactical tip there is treat this like this is the meeting with the CEO.
Right.
Because you're the CEO of your life, your work, whatever you want to call it. You would not cancel if this was the meeting with the CEO of your company.
Right.
But you will cancel the meeting with yourself. So make yourself the CEO of your space and really protect that time.
Yeah. And definitely as I process, you know, what you're describing, you're going to feel a lot more accomplished coming out of that time that you blocked out for yourself, knowing, you know, it's setting and achieving a goal, you know, even their micro goals, right? You know, I've got this off my plate, you know, I can feel good about it. Awesome.
Yeah. So I promised I could transition us into that bigger.
Yeah. I'm just sitting back and, you know, I'll just kick up here and chill. Yeah, go ahead.
So let me do that.
Yeah.
So I have a phrase that I call compounding productivity.
Right.
And this is just like compounding interest, because when we work on the right things, more good things happen and we really get in the zone with that work. So when you block out time on your calendar, what happens? You get that thing done. You make progress towards the goal. You're feeling more successful instead of defeated at the end of the day. That's that compounding productivity effect. And what I see is that now we just, the snowball effect gets into motion. But the key is a lot of people get stuck in this busyness trap. So I'm busy because I get this many emails a day and my Slack and team messages are blowing up and everybody needs me because I'm a manager.
Right.
All of that keeps you busy. My encouragement is to be productive. So that means you got to know where you're headed. What's the purpose? Back to the why. Why does it matter? Where are we going? When we know that, now we can experience that compounding productivity because we're working on the right stuff. We're not stuck in email. Now, if you're in customer service and email is your job, that's a different story. But for a lot of people, that core, like they're best in the morning, they're on, their energy's high. What do they do in the morning? Answer emails.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah. That's right. When they should be doing the productive work.
Right after my own heart on that. We're definitely on the same page on that one in the energy management. More to this? Yeah. More to this? Do you feel like you've covered compounding productivity? I mean, it makes sense. Yeah, it's just compounded wellness also, right? It's across your life.
Yeah. And the effects of it are huge. So, you know, I think where your attention goes, where your energy flows, like, that is a really big deal. And I think that when we're taking action towards the right things, towards those goals, I can't explain it, but like the universe gives you more in that space, right? And I really have experienced this. I know a lot of people who have experienced this, and that's where that compounding energy, like that compounding productivity, there's no downside to it. Like, let it go.
Yeah, I mean, being more intentional, you know, keeps you in alignment with the flow as opposed to the chaoticness of being random in how you manage your day and then realizing you're not getting things done and have that compound in the wrong direction, you know, stress or otherwise. So yeah, it makes perfect sense. And it's some real simple things that you can do here. Certainly try out, which is the hardest part at first, to start creating healthy work habits for yourself in this way, but give it a try. The calendar blocking to get the priorities done, as simple as that is, you know, I imagine most people don't do it. And that's a great thing to come out of this. Before we move on to our next segment of the show, Adam, Insights to Live By, I want to make sure, Sarah, that we are being complete. Is there anything more that you'd like to cover in and around productivity?
I would say, just to circle back on the neurodiversity piece,
Sure.
I think when we're talking about productivity, it's impossible to ignore the different brains on your team. And so if you are a leader, if you are in any capacity, someone who can control or impact the work environment and the culture, like, make work safe. Make it a place where people can come and be themselves and they can be open, because the result of that on profit, on people's wellness, on productivity, it's so tremendous. Like, when people can stop wasting energy trying to cover up who they really are and they can be them full selves at work, when you unleash that, like, that is an invisible superpower
right.
that lives on teams that I think a lot of teams are missing. So if you're in any leadership type of role, like, make it safe so people can come and share, like, who they really are at work.
I'm glad you reinforced that. And there's actually one loose end in answering my own question. I wanted to, you know, specifically ask you about, when you're talking about the priorities and staying on task and, you know, knowing and having that clarity, what's essential for, you know, all the things we've already discussed, and someone comes to you however, through an email or trying to avoid the squirrel, distractions and things of that nature, how do you say no?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, no is a complete sentence. So
yes.
It's also okay to say no, and you don't have to
saying
give a reason.
No. Yes. Yes.
But sometimes I find it's quite helpful. So one of the exercises I do with coaching clients is we determine what are the parameters in which you are going to say no. And essentially that goes back to knowing your goals, knowing where you're headed. So if you know my top three goals for this quarter are ABC. So if it's not in alignment with ABC, I can say no to that thing. Again, most of us are really nice people, and I'm sure your listeners of your podcast are the best, the right. most nice people.
Right.
It's hard for us to say no, but again, this permission to say no is one thing, but when you have those parameters of, okay, these are the goals, and if it doesn't fit into that, I am giving myself permission to say no without feeling guilty,
right.
because that's a huge part.
Right.
It's so much easier. And then if you feel like you need to say no, you can say no because I'm recording a podcast with Matt at that same time. No, because my goals for this year are this. And I think, again, share as much as you want.
Sure.
But I think when you have a set of standards by which you're measuring saying yes or no, the decision becomes a lot easier and it reduces the guilt. It's not personal. I'm not saying no for a personal reason. I'm really in tune with my goals and I'm really focused right now. And that's just not going to fit in this week. Maybe I'll do it later.
Yeah. I mean, look, I could do a whole show on saying no, to be honest with you. And look, you know, a couple things to add as in thinking this through. Look, there's certain people who just really have a hard time saying no. And just in terms of their personality and the dynamics there. And the challenge that you have is that when you don't say no, and when you ought to actually say no, then you're stuck with the thing that you said yes to. And then you feel terrible about yourself when you're doing that thing, knowing you should have said no. So there's a compounding effect there as well. And then coming back to answering that same question in and around being clear about your priorities and the things that you know you have to get done. If something comes up and you recognize someone's asking you to do something or however it happens, and you recognize, you know, this is really something I should say no to. I think, you know, giving them an explanation is just fine as well. You know, hey, I really appreciate you thinking of me for this. The reality is that I have X, Y, Z that are really taking my attention. That's not something I can take on right now. Is this something that is, you know, can that we can revisit, or you have some other way to get this done? I need to stay focused.
Absolutely.
How was that?
The other tangible tip, since we're given so many today.
Yes.
Is, you know, when someone asks you something, remember a few minutes ago, I said, pause and ask what and why. I think often we get trapped essentially in, oh goodness, I said yes to something. And now that's way more than I thought it was going to be. Like, I shouldn't have said yes to that thing. And now I'm resenting that thing.
Right.
That happens often. So if you give yourself that space to say, all right, I don't have to answer immediately. I'm just going to, you know, take 24 hours and actually think about this. I'm going to get clarity on what it is and why it matters. Does it align with my larger priorities? give yourself the space to make a good decision there. And don't be shy to ask those clarifying questions, because if we're quick to say yes, you might have agreed to something you actually really didn't understand.
And they'll respect you more.
That C goes back in. Again, the code system is 90% in C. Like clarity, clarity, clarity. When we get that clarity, we don't even have to do some of the stuff we're worried about.
Yeah, and you're standing up for yourself also, and the priorities at hand, and you know that person who, in a way, maybe is taking advantage of you just a little bit, will respect you more for sticking to your guns. I'm so glad we went there. It's the right sidebar, even so. Now, Sarah, before we get to our insights to live by, we have a segment on the show you may be aware of, because I know that you are a listener of the show. They are our insights about you. As you see on the screen, we have the Wheel of Insights. And we're just going to spin this a couple of times. Let's learn something more about you. Oh,
okay.
And as the guest, you can pass on a question if you don't want it.
Oh, great. Okay.
Ah. Okay, so we landed on childhood memory number one. This is about something good. So anything that you'd like to share here, or we can spin again?
Well, I've always been a... My business partner, Jeff, just wrote, he was helping me tweak my bio, and he goes, I think we have to get in here that you're a collector of classy shoes. You love classy shoes. So my childhood memory that popped up, because we literally were working on that yesterday, is that I remember the night my sister was born, and I had those jelly shoes that were really popular in the 80s. And I was like, oh, this is cool. I get to go to my grandma's house tonight and she's got my jelly shoes. I can wear those. Like completely missing that my wonderful baby sister was about to be born. But I was like, aww. I get to go wear these very cool shoes. So that popped in my mind because we were just talking about my love of shoes yesterday.
I love it. Yeah. I probably have some shoes from the 80s myself, but it's more of kind of a dad, you know, a dork dad thing, then, you know, cool. Okay, Sarah, next to our next one about you, spinning again. Ooh, this has never been on the wheel before. It actually takes us to the other side. Turnoffs. Now, this is kind of an unusual question. Something you want to handle or you want to pass?
What turns me off?
Turnoffs. Yeah, what turns you off?
Well, if I'm being honest, I don't appreciate spam. So if you're listening and you've sent me some, no, I mean, listen, we're on here talking about time management. On here talking about respecting our time and other people's time. Sure. And I would say if you're an internet spammer, like that's a turnoff. Don't do that, because you know, if we've got something,
it's
of
not
value,
effective either.
Yeah. If we, well, I don't know. I have no idea the stats on that one, but for me, When there is something of real value and we have a relationship and we've met each other and we can collaborate and share, like, yeah, like let's make something cool happen. But more often than not, I get I sent you an email and now I'm putting this back to the top of your thing. And did you see what I sent you? And then did you see I'm like, I didn't ask you to send me that thing. And now you're hounding me. Did I look at it? And I think there's just
right.
There's ways to make sure also that
that's spam in a way.
I have what you have, what I need. So again, if you're selling something that I really need, like awesome. And if you've done your research, I'm all in. But I think there's a lot of times I get like, hey Sarah, we know you need this, and I'm like, that's not even the line of work that I'm in. So you missed on that one. So that's a turnoff, and I think it's a turnoff for a lot of people and a time waster. So.
Right. It's so funny. It's timely here. Today, actually, Sarah, I got so many emails today, and I unsubscribed to like 25 different emails today of all days for you to bring that up. So I thought you'd be proud of me for unsubscribing from all those spammers. All right, here we go. We're into our insights to live by. There are three we're looking for you to share. They could be anything related to productivity, something a mentor told you, something your parents passed on. These are your Z-isms. So, Sarah, what is your first insight to live by?
So my first one is, and again, these are sort of in the entrepreneurial space, but also if you're someone who's about to take a risk or make a decision. So that's what lane these are all in. My first one is, what's the worst that will happen?
I like it.
And I really love that question because it's easy to think about, oh gosh, this could go wrong. I don't know if I should do that thing. And I really love this question because as you really drill down to it, like what's the worst that's going to happen? And what's worse than that? And what's worse than that? For many of us, and again, we're in a space that we're successful entrepreneurs. We have incomes, we have homes, we have jobs. I think when you really go down a few levels, it's like it's just not that bad. And because we live in a
Right.
country, in a place where we are blessed with opportunity, that is the case. And I hope that guides people as you're making decisions, because it's probably not as bad as you think it is going to be.
Right.
And like you can probably get out of it as well. Like
Yeah.
you are a smart, talented, capable person. And so like what's the worst that's going to happen?
Hey, I mean, super sensible, right? We're talking about overthinking here, in and around the concept of earned confidence, because once you acknowledge what's the worst that can happen? And then you acknowledge, oh, I can handle that. Even if that's the worst that can happen, now you don't have to worry about it, right? And now you ha if knowing you can handle the worst is also going to encourage you to follow through on what's the best that could happen on the other side of actually acting on it. So I love that. Thank you. Never had that one before. In fact, most of our insights to live by are fresh and new. You are right on track there. Over to our second, Sarah. What are your thoughts?
So this really leads into this one, which is you'll always wonder. So you said, you know, what's the worst that could happen? Well, what's the best thing that could happen? The best thing that could happen is that you might succeed at that thing you're trying to consider. And if you don't, you're always going to wonder. So naturally, you know, I think about when I was thinking about starting my business or not. And someone said to me, Sarah, if you don't, you're always going to wonder if you could. And you're going to, you know, take another job or go work for someone else, but you're always going to wonder, could I have started my own business? And that just hit me. And I was like, you are right. Because back to what's the worst that could happen? I'm intelligent and smart. I could have a great resume. I could go get another job, right? There's no harm in that.
Right.
But I would always wonder, could I have done that thing? So again, if you're wrestling with something, I just think go for it because you're always going to wonder. If there's something you're wondering about, you're always going to wonder.
Yeah, I mean, look, potential regret I find to be a major motivator. And it certainly reminds me in striking a chord from where we began and how we know each other in and around speaking. You know, trying to pursue that alignment of personal and professional mastery in what is also going to be in alignment with what we find most fulfilling is a heck of a goal to pursue, but one I know personally I would regret not doing, and so
Great
I will
example.
continue to follow your lead on the speaking pursuit, Sarah. Okay, your third and final insight to live by. What do you
So
got?
this one's not mine. I have to give credit to Marie Forleo, who wrote the book Everything is Figure Outable.
One of my favorites.
That phrase is just so fantastic. And I think in those moments where you're like, yeah, what's the worst thing could happen? I'm always going to wonder. It's like everything's figure outable. And again, likely the listeners of this show are educated, intelligent people who are capable. Like you're going to figure it out. And if it's going to be hard some days, like you're still going to figure it out. And I think that that message is just so clear. So that was a book I read early on in my entrepreneurial journey. And it's literally, you know, you'll see it's still sitting on my shelf because that message of like, you got this, it is, you can figure it out is huge.
Yeah, I follow relatively few of those types of individuals, and she is definitely a standout, and you know, it certainly strikes a chord with me as well. And look, simple questions to consider, and certainly you probably did this on purpose, but has a lot to do with your productivity as well in terms of determining those answers and getting out of your own head and taking the actions that matter. So, Sarah, any final thoughts that you have as we wrap up here? Anything that we missed? Anything you'd like to share?
Well, just that I'm here to serve people. I'm in the positions I'm in with National Speakers Association and with my business to help people. So that's what I'm here to do. So questions if you have follow-up from today, if you're like, she said something and I'm not sure what I should do about that or implement that, you know, shoot me an email, connect with me online. LinkedIn's a great place. I'm here to help and serve.
Yeah.
So I hope that came across today, but want to reiterate that I welcome people to reach out to me.
Highly, highly evident. And this will be in the show notes, but certainly soproductive.com is a hyphen, soproductive.com. Sarah Ohanesson, thank you so much for being my guest and for being my friend. Wonderful to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Matt.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Insights to Live By. Please feel welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn and Instagram and make the most of our free resources to improve your life for good at mattzinman.com. Wishing you and yours an enriching day, and we'll see you next time.